Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The checkered flag ends the race, but it's only the start of the conversation. Michelin post-race tag on IMSAradio.com. Have your say. Ask the experts. Make your point. Michelin post-race tag. The end of the race is only the beginning.
Well, interesting stuff, particularly at the end for the eventual winners. They were nearly cleared up by the battle for second in LMP2. Welcome along to Michelin post-race tech for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship event, the Hyundai Monterey Sports Car Championship at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. Shea Adam and Jeremy Shaw joining me in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. And your questions and observations for what has been a very busy weekend for IMSA Radio, and indeed all of us here at the Radio Show Limited network of channels. 6 hours of the Nürburgring, three Porsche races, and that was at Indianapolis, and of course the full weekend from WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. We provided a little bit of entertainment for you. Jeremy Shaw, you'll have been doing a little bit of arithmetic there as we get into Michelin post-race tech. I know that the number 10 team of Cunningham and Alta Acura and Wayne Taylor Racing were very happy with that pass at the end, because Renger van der Zand has done them a bit of his favour over that Whelen Engineering Cadillac. How does it stand at the top of the shop?
It stands now with the lead for Taylor and Albuquerque at 98 points, I reckon, over Felipe Nasr and Pipo Durrani. A change for third position with the Renger van der Zande and Kevin Magnussen. I now think we'll have 25-27, so they're 140 behind Nasr Durrani, but will move ahead of the Mazda team of Jarvis and Ticknell, who have 25-22. So the Mazda came into this weekend just a couple of points behind the number 31 car, but now lose another position. It'll be 5 points behind, further back in fourth position.
Yeah, that was a significant pass there, wasn't it, at the end for the championship. And an interesting share that when you were talking to the guys at Mayor Shank Racing early on, Philip Albuquerque, for your poll interview, it seems that Acura have more control and more influence over their two teams than perhaps GM and Cadillac do, because there was a definite, well, it wasn't even a suggestion, it was just a point of fact almost, that number 60 car wasn't going to be allowed to get involved in the championship fight.
Yep, you are spot on. And I'm sad for the MSR crew, because they are the only ones with, I hate to even put it this way, a lack of success so far this year. They've had the least number of podiums out of any of the DPI teams. I'm pretty sure five might actually be the one who's got the least podiums. But they haven't had the same results. Whereas the 10 crew, this is their third win of the season. But they are the ones clearly trying to pave the way for the championship battle. And coming into the race today, I said it in our countdown to green, Cadillac with the advantage, 2,606 points before the race began, Acura chasing them 25-21. That gap has been severely decreased, but it still exists. It's still Acura chasing Cadillac. And it is, as you said, Acura seemed to be one cohesive unit split between two teams, whereas last year it was all under the banner of Team Penske. And at this very circuit, let's not forget, Dane Cameron and Juan Pablo Montoya dominated the race, but they gave way to the sister car so that Ricky and Elio would have a chance at winning the Drivers' Championship.
Yeah, very, very good point. What sort of surprises me, though, with the Cadillac situation, Jeremy, is that we've only just recently had the Cadillac ongoing announcement for LMDH, which is sort of anointed both of the teams that we are talking about here, the Action Express guys who run the Whelen Engineering car, and Chip Ganassi, whose name is still on the entry for the 01 car. They've been anointed as the ongoing teams of choice to be work supported in the LMH category, and yet that doesn't really work for Cadillac in their chasing down of the championship for both the manufacturers and the drivers' championship.
No, I mean, you know, effectively, you know, it cost the number 31 team 20 points in their quest for the championship. So what would have been 78 is now 98 point differential. In the old point system, which I still have, you know, because I've been doing it for so long, it's much easier to do with. You know, that's not very many. So 7 or 8 points as opposed to 80 or 90. But that's the differential. 7 or 8 points. You know, it's still something you can overcome with still a couple of races remaining, but it certainly makes it more difficult.
Yeah, it is the lottery of Long Beach and the street circuit coming up, and then to the longer race of the 10 hours of Motul-Petit-Le Mans. You could get to more. Races that are opposite in their sets of circumstances, both in the distance, the time involved, the strategy calls, even the layout of the circuits, Jeremy. And you would think, wouldn't you, that they'd want to keep that Whelen car in the fight?
Yes, indeed. So I'm surprised that you know, there wasn't somebody imploring Chip Ganassi Racing not to make that pass at the end of the race. I mean, you know, those two cars they've been together for probably 75% of this whole contest, you know, for 2 hours, probably 2 hours of the 2 hours, 40 minutes, and just staring at the back end of the car. Well, you know, they waited to the last possible minute and pulled off the call. I mean, you know, it's racing after all. So you're going to go for that position, but still it doesn't help the Cadillac cause, which I would have thought would have been important.
Yeah, me too. Scary moment at the end, Shea, for Ricky Taylor. Literally, last two corners of the last lap, and the battle for second place in LMP2 came together, it would appear. Gabby Aubrey spinning one way, sending Ryan DL in the Era car the other, and picking up one of the Hagerty Motorsport signs. Great for one of our partners, not so much for Era Motorsport, who dropped out a second and off the podium. And Ricky Taylor has to drive through the middle of the mayhem.
Yeah, very scary moment for Ricky. I'm glad that Ryan DL was actually able to continue around the track. So we know that the damage wasn't so much that it actually caused the car to come to a halt and such, as that car has had a difficult August. We don't want September to be the same way for them as well with their Le Mans trials and tribulations that they had at Road America from victory. But the bigger impact is the results on the championship, because it meant that Ben Keating and Mikkel Jensen, who won the race, they now have 1,807 points, I believe, by my count. The people chasing them with a realistic chance at victory finished third instead of fourth. So it's an additional 20 points for Tristan Nunez and for Stephen Thomas. They have a big ask, and they need more LMP2 cars at Petit Le Mans. If we don't get a bigger field, it should be the championship sealed up for Ben Keating and Mikkel Jensen. But if we get more than four cars at Petit Le Mans, that does still mathematically leave Tristan and Stephen with the shot at the championship. And most importantly, John, we have not had a repeat winner in the long distance races in LMP2 this year. So that leaves the door open even further.
Kyle Tilley was on the stand this weekend for Era Motorsport, and he's not happy at all about the fact that no action was taken on that contact call between Gabby Aubrey and Ryan DL. and has tweeted basically means last lap of the race is a free-for-all then. So not only, you know, what could have happened to the leader, Jeremy, but a bad taste in the mouth left there. And that's not a good situation to have moving forward to the rest of the season.
No, it's not. And that team's been a bit kind of mercurial in any case, haven't they? I mean, they are going to do the season. They're not going to do the season. They are going to do this race. They're not going to do this race. You're not quite sure where they're going to go next. But certainly, yeah, if that is the case, we didn't see it. So we can't really comment on that. But and the heat of the moment, a team principal should not be tweeting, quite frankly, in the heat of the moment, moments after it's happened, unless he has the entire picture to hand. So you might want to add that, but
fair point.
Yeah, we will hear more about it, and I'm sure the stewards will look at it, and you know, if they determine that there was some a case to answer, I'm sure it will be answered. You've got to be fairly sensible in this sort of situation. I understand it. I get the frustration, of course, particularly, but then it was the second place, not the win. Which is not relevant to anything, quite frankly. You know, an incident is an incident. If it shouldn't have taken place, it shouldn't have taken place, and somebody should be held accountable if it was an avoidable incident. Take nothing away from PR1 Matters and Motorsports. They dominated this race. They've been the class act all the way through the season. They were beaten by Era last time out, and very, very, very well indeed. So hats off to Era for doing that and for coming at this last moment and running well. But clearly Ryan Donnell was struggling in that late stages, lost a lot of ground to Mikkel Jensen in that final stint. And then finally, of course, apparently it all came to tears on the final lap.
Got to have a chapeau to both of the drivers. We talked about Ben Keating and his qualifying performance. Mikkel Jensen with that 16-3. 50 minutes ago, when he planted that in, which was quicker than the existing race lap record for DPI share. He can pedal a car, Mikkel Jensen. He really can. He's been a really good find, hasn't he?
He has been. And remember, John, we first saw him at Bathurst a couple years ago. He was one of the BMW young drivers that they had put into a race car that unfortunately didn't have the best of results. But he's somebody who has been on the general radar for quite some time, the American radar as of late. Ben Keating, absolutely wonderful partnership with Mikkel Jensen. I think they've really become friends over the course of this year too. And the only unfortunate thing is we have to wait until Petit to next see what he can do. And that is a race that he has done before, which is different to basically everything we've seen so far on the calendar in 2021. I'm just double checking my notes for where he finished last year in Petit. Oh yes, that was a win.
Yeah. Absolutely. He's a talent. There's no doubt about it. And he's forged a really good relationship with Ben Keating.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And he is a talent and deservedly so. And you know, Ben likes, well, to quote Chip Ganassi, Ben likes winners, doesn't he? Yeah. But look, that lap, to put that lap into perspective by Mikkel Jensen, it was faster than Felipe Nasr, the number 31 car, the P2 car, Mikkel Jensen, turned faster laps in the race than the third placed overall car of Felipe Nasr, also quicker than Oli Pla, and fractionally behind.
Wow.
Fractionally behind Oliver Jarvis. Oliver Jarvis and Harry Tinkler, is actually Tinkler set the faster lap at a 16.327 against a 16.371 of Mikkel Jensen.
Yeah,
I've just noticed that somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's absolutely astonishing, and hats off to him. And let's give those P2 cars just a tad more, and let's see what they can do overall. Please.
I know. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. Eddie Kavanagh says, love the coverage from you guys this weekend. A little bit of madness on the last lap certainly was. Carol Brink, just round the corner from the racetrack. Hello, Carol. Thanks for your support this weekend. Was there a single moment in the race meeting this weekend that was pivotal? I can't decide, she says. And Phil says, the pivotal or maybe non-pivotal non-moment, the distinct lack of late race yellow. Loved the green racing, though. Oh, and by the way, no one ran out of fuel either. That was a neat race event. I mean, that to me was extraordinary, because I was scratching my head at some of those tactics. But, you know, we've talked about the Acura's, you know, putting that edict out earlier on. Was that Mayer-Shank Racing making a point to Acura, from what Felipe said earlier on? And that's cost them maybe a 1-2 for Acura there.
Well, I think so. I mean, yeah, they qualified 1-2. And clearly, you know, this is a track that suits the Acura. They've won now from the pole position 3 years in a row. Yeah, they've not had easy runs of it. But this is a car that suits that. This is a track that suits that car. They've taken full advantage of it. I mean, the pivotal moment was Konica Minolta Cadillac Racing turning up here this weekend and making a trip out to the West Coast, because that has been the class of the field all the way through the weekend, and, you know, a thoroughly dominant win at the end of the day. But you know, the Cadillacs were fast on occasion, certainly, and you know, it took everything that Philippe Albuquerque and Ricky Taylor could do to maintain that advantage. And, you know, even the fact that we went, what, well over 2 hours of green flag racing.
Correct.
There's only 14 seconds between the first and second car, and Felipe Nasr, it was right there behind in third position as well. So, you know, it was a really good race from that perspective. It wasn't the most exciting race we've seen this season by a long, long way, but it was certainly interesting. And, you know, I don't get that strategy. 42 laps Ollie Plum managed on that last tank of fuel, which is just astonishing, I think. But I think they missed a trick there, quite frankly, and I think they should have had probably 1-2 finish. But still, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, huh?
Yeah, you say that again. The GT Le Mans, we talked about LMP2, GT Le Mans, Nick Tandy finally gets a bit of redemption, Shea Adam. I think he's been a bit disappointed this year. He went to the Corvette Racing team, of course, paired with Tommy Milner, with only the WeatherTech Racing Porsche for real competition, as well as the teammates as well. But that's his first points, that pair's first points-paying victory this year.
Well, and you want a little bit of a shocker. Nick Tandy has won at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca before, back when it was Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, I want to say, because it was 2013, and he won driving in the American Le Mans Series GTC category. I believe that was his first ALMS win as well. Nick was very much an unknown back in those days. Well, this was his 70th start in IMSA, his 15th win, his 28th podium. Nick is somebody who definitely has had this win a long time coming. And it's been a bit of an odd season to only have the one win for Nick and Tommy. Tommy, who's quite frankly one of the most underrated GTLM drivers, they really worked together and they went with a different strategy from the start. I've got to give this win to Hollywood too, because you've got to credit the guys on the box and the guys turning the wrenches.
You said there was going to be two distinct strategies and they would kind of work out which one was better. Well, either the fours was right or the threes was right. And if the threes was right, they didn't execute it properly. And the four did better, or the four was right. Really interesting moment though, Jeremy, on the exit of the pit lane from Nick Tandy. I didn't mention Brittany Tandy, Nick's wife, in Bedford in the centre of England, because every time I mention her, something seems to go wrong with the car. So she's just tweeted that they're finally the winners. But Nick was really clearly knew how close it was going to be coming out the pit lane, and actually took that unconventional line across the dirt into the middle of the Mario Andretti hairpin, but just managed to get track position. And ultimately, that actually was the turning point.
Indeed. I mean, as always, the two Corvettes are identical. It's just a question of what you do with them. And this day, you know, the number 14 came out ahead. Nick and Nick Tandy and Tom Milner did an excellent job and came away with a win. They were behind for a goodly portion of the race, but they were fastest through much of the qualifying session. They passed, I think, in one of the practice sessions, and it was a well earned victory for them. You, as you talked about, the first championship win. They did win the non-championship run at the demonstration run at Detroit, but that's not counting towards any
Correct.
Records for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. So it's been a long time coming, but it was very, very well earned. And there's a great race between those two. And I'm sure they'll be sharing a beer there in the Corvette team this evening after a job very, very well done.
Yeah, that was the point where the two strategies came together, where effectively the stagger unwound and Tandy knew he had to be ahead. He got out ahead, turned it into a 10-second victory, actually, at the end of the race. Although he's credited with 112 laps to 111 for Garcia. So I wonder if the leader did just get between them
at
the end of the race. GT Daytona, teams at the head of the head of the timing screen there, which we are used to seeing there. So Pfaff Motorsports from Paul Miller Racing, from Wright Motorsports, Porsche Lamborghini Porsche, Bill Oberlin having a coming together, it would have seemed, with Pat Long, but that's that didn't come to anything. They were just off the podium. Heart of Racing, mixed day for them. And their podium finishing streak comes to an end with the 23 car. Extra car in this weekend did not last a full racing lap. And Vasa Sullivan in the top six with one of their two cars. Relatively uneventful GTD race, although only 8 seconds between the top three, Jeremy.
Yeah, no, it was a straight race at least, and that's always good to see. And in terms of the points table, for Bill Oberlin and Robbie Foley, fourth place today, but they will actually extend their lead. They've got 22-42, I reckon. After here, up into second place now with a second win in a row, will go Zach Robichon and Laurence Vanthoor on 22-15. So only, 27 points behind. And they will be now 25 points ahead of Roma De Andrés and Ross Gunn in the Aston Martin. They'll slip to third. And only 34 points behind them now, Brian Sellers and Madison Snow. So it's a tremendous battle amongst those top four. The top four in the championship finish in the top four positions here, albeit in a different order. So that's going to be really, really tight coming down to the end. In a manufacturer's battle for GTD, Aston Martin came into this weekend leading, but will leave in third position. I reckon that Porsche, with the win again today, third win of the season, they'll have 23-49 to the 23-11 of BMW, 22-88 for Aston Martin and 22-73 for Lamborghini. So super tight there. That's the overall. Where's the
Sprint
Cup?
Yeah.
That again, the Aston Martin team has still got a good lead there. 1968. They will retain now 60-point lead over Robbie Foley and Bill Oberlin. So it's come down by 20 points, but they will maintain that advantage. In third position there now will be Brian Sellers and Madison Snow on 17-88. So just 20 then behind Oberlin and Foley. In third position will remain Aaron Tielitz and Jack Hawks was on 17-65. And then Frankie Montecalvo on 17-22. So still very, very tight in the Sprint Cup Drivers' Championship and teams. Manufacturers, again, still Aston Martin leads on 20-41. 19-74 for Lexus. They remain in second position. Lamborghini remains third on 19-20. And then BMW 18-85 and Porsche on 18-77. But all of those have closed up.
And what have we got left for the Sprint Championship? Just VIR? Sorry, Jim.
No, and Long Beach.
Oh, right. So that was going to be my next question. We're back in 2 weeks' time. Long Beach. What categories do we have at Long Beach here?
DPI, GTLM, and GTD.
Right, okay. That makes sense. So that is going to be very interesting indeed. Then the GT only meeting at VIR, and then into November before we round the season off, and we've got all of the developmental series there as well, other than Lamborghini, which go off to Europe for their final two rounds. Mazda MX-5, the Idemitsu Mazda MX-5 Cup did its usual thing this weekend, and all those championships have closed up a wee bit as well. The Michelin Pilot Challenge delivered, and even away from WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, had a cracking weekend in the Porsche Carrera Cup North America, and that championship at the head of the field and in the Junior Championship, well, that set closed up as well for three final races at Mortul Petit Le Mans as well, between Parker Thompson, Kai van Berlo and Sebastian Priol. A weekend to forget from Kai van Berlo. If you haven't heard those races, they're already on the archive on imsaradio.com. Very interesting weekend there. Jeremy Shear, thank you very much indeed for being with us. Our technical team have worked miracles this weekend in covering so much of the world, and so much of the world of IMSA as well, at the different events that we've brought to you live and free here on imsaradio.com and RS1 as well, as part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. We'll be back on Wednesday for Midweek Motorsport on RS1. Next weekend we've got more events for you, including the ELMS at Spa. Johnny Palmer leading the coverage for that. And then it's Long Beach for IMSA in 2 weeks' time. Enjoy what's left of your weekend. Have a good week. We'll talk to you on Wednesday, 8 o'clock UK time, RS1 for Midweek Motorsport. Bye-bye.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.